Right, Glenn, what are the objectives of the Mars Global Surveyor?
The objectives of the Global Surveyor mission are to paint a global picture of Mars, to understand its atmosphere and its surface, the interaction of the atmosphere and the surface, to understand where there might have been water in the past. We want to understand what the magnetic field looks like. We want to be able to find sites where other missions in the future can land and do additional research. So generally, it's to provide the big global database about Mars to extend our knowledge of the whole planet far beyond where it is today.
The earlier missions, of course, did tell us a great deal about Mars, but perhaps in just a low-resolution mode. Is that right?
The early missions just flew by the planet, and we were able to take just a few pictures. And in the late 1960s, everybody thought Mars looked just like the Moon. As a matter of fact, we flew by the portion of the planet that really lacked the big geographical features, the really tall mountains and the small volcanoes and the big canyons and so forth. And we saw a surface that just had craters, and everybody said, oh my goodness, that's just the Moon all over again. Mm. But then, with the orbiting spacecraft in the early 70s, we were able to see all of the planet, really. And that was our first glimpse of Mars that really had, you know, immense volcanoes and deep canyons and wasn't like the Moon at all.
That was my impression when Mariner 4 flew by. And, you know, there was these craters, and there weren't any of these canals and channels. And, well, they, of course, missed the Great Mariner Valley and the other chasms at that time. But it did look just like the Moon.
I think the Mariner 4 mission really put to bed all of the issues that Professor Lowell had about lakes and rivers and all of those other things that really captured people's imagination for years. I mean, as I grew up, I remember everybody telling me about rivers and lakes and forests that changed color and everything in Mars, and certainly Mariner 4 proved that was not the case at all.
And of course, Mariner 9 showed us that there were rivers there indeed, but ancient ones.
Very long ago, and that's been the great mystery ever since, is where did all of that water, which there's evidence all over the planet that there was great amounts of liquid on the planet. Where did that all go, and why did it all go? Certainly we know that the way the atmosphere is today, it can't support liquid water on the surface. It's far too thin. But lots of people think that there's water just under the surface. We certainly know that there's frozen water at the poles. But to the extent that there may be frozen water below the surface or frozen water at the bottom of deep craters and other chasms. Those are the kind of things we're looking for in detail now.
So you got the spacecraft away. How did the launch go?
Well, it was a great launch. It was actually the second day of our launch period that we got off. Thunderstorms in Florida scrubbed the launch on the first day, but the second day was quite smooth, and we had a really nice liftoff. The Delta launch vehicle just provided us a very perfect injection.
And we were able to cover that live here on 88.3 Southern FM, thanks to that launch delay.
Very good.
And you then spent several months cruising towards Mars. Did you do any work on the way there?
Well, it turned out just after launch, we discovered kind of our first problem with the mission. The spacecraft was all bundled up on top of the launch vehicle inside its nose fairing. And then just after launch, it had to expand its solar panels away from the spacecraft. But we noticed that one of the solar panels didn't quite deploy all the way it should. It was about 20 degrees from being fully deployed. And that causes a little bit of concern, because the solar panels will be used later on in the mission as part of aerobraking, and we can talk about that in a while. But other than that, the mission, the cruise portion of the mission, worked very well. The spacecraft had its magnetometers turned on, and we were able to look at a really large solar event that the SOHO spacecraft had identified a couple of days ahead of time. And when the solar material came past the orbit, we were able to confirm the measurements that SOHO made. We took an image of Mars as we approached. We took images of some stars to calibrate the camera. But otherwise, it was a real quiet sort of cruise mission.
And when did you arrive at Mars?
Global Surveyor arrived at Mars on the 11th of September, 1997. So we've been at Mars just a little over a year now. we used the spacecraft's propulsive capability to get captured into Mars orbit. We changed the velocity of the spacecraft a little over 900 meters per second, and that enabled us to get captured in an orbit that's 45 hours in duration, a very egg-shaped, very elliptical orbit.
Did you use aerobraking to actually help you get into orbit?
No, we didn't use aerobraking to get into the orbit. We used a propulsive technique for that. But all of the rest of the orbital change that we used to change the elliptical orbit down to a circular orbit, we'll use this technique called aerobraking. And aerobraking is where we lower the spacecraft's closest point to the planet so that it just skims through the top of the Martian atmosphere. And by slowing the spacecraft on each pass, the highest point of the orbit is gradually reduced. And after some 800 passes through the top of the atmosphere, we'll get this egg-shaped orbit down to a circular orbit. And it'll be 2 hours in duration as compared to the 45 hours in duration it started out.
Why do you use aerobraking rather than just fire off another rocket?
Well, firing off another rocket would be the simplest way, but that requires us to take a lot of fuel to Mars. Taking a lot of fuel to Mars requires a bigger launch vehicle. And because this mission was pretty constrained by the costs that we could spend on it, we had to choose a small launch vehicle, the Delta II. And because of that, we couldn't carry very much fuel, so we had to use this innovative technique of aerobraking in order to compensate for the lack of having all that fuel. We still use fuel in very, very small amounts to adjust or trim the orbit and to control the spacecraft's attitude while we fly through the atmosphere. But that's a very small amount of fuel compared to what it would really take to burn propulsively down to the final orbit.
Well, Glenn, I believe you had to sort of slow down the aerobraking and pull the craft back up out of the atmosphere. Why did you do that?
Well, we started aerobraking with all the best intentions, and we thought that we had identified the problem that caused the solar panel not to fully deploy at launch. But after about a dozen passes through the atmosphere, we saw the panel just not behaving the way we thought it would. It bent a lot more. It moved a lot more in the force of the atmosphere. And so we got very alarmed and were very concerned that perhaps there was some life-limiting situation going on. So we moved the spacecraft up out of the atmosphere for several weeks while we did a bunch of analysis on what might have been wrong with the panel. And we found that there probably was a secondary failure at launch during the initial deployment. And in fact, other than the little piece of metal that we think was trapped in the solar panel's hinge, we actually think that part of the structure fractured. The support structure that holds the solar panel is a aluminum honeycomb, much the way a corrugated box is built. Aluminum honeycomb with graphite epoxy faceplates on it. And we think that when the solar panel deployed in a kind of improper way right at launch, that the faceplate on one side of the support structure cracked or maybe fractured completely. And what we're seeing, in fact, is the panel flexing around that crack. Now, if we aerobrake very aggressively like we had originally planned, that crack might further fatigue and break and the panel would fall off or something very terrible like that. So during the time we took off from aerobraking last fall, we did some analysis that said if we aerobrake at a much less aggressive rate with less force on the panel, that there shouldn't be any life-limiting capability here or characteristic. So that's what we're doing now. We redesigned the mission to extend it in length by a year to allow us to aerobrake at a lot less lower force on the panel. And that's the process we're in right now. We did one segment of aerobraking. We took a rest for about 6 months while Mars and the spacecraft moved around the sun, so when we continued to start aerobraking again, which we've just recently done, the spacecraft will end up in the right orbit with the right lighting conditions when we get down to 2 hours.
While you were in that highly elliptical orbit, though, it wasn't a total loss of time, was it?
Oh, absolutely not. That was one of the neat features. We thought it initially that maybe this mechanical failure had really disrupted the mission and we would be looking at a big loss. But in fact, due to the ingenuity of our mission planners, we were able to find this new mission plan, and the ingenuity of our mechanical people to suggest what the proper level of aerobraking was, that we could extend the mission this additional year, and everything would be fine. During that year period, though, we were also able to configure the spacecraft, that is, point the science instruments at the planet and record data on board during the passes when the spacecraft was closest to the planet. And we could obtain science data that we had never planned to acquire. And actually, during these times, we'd actually be closer to the planet, so the data will be of higher resolution. So we've actually gotten a whole bunch of what I call bonus science data out of this year. So the year has not been a loss at all. I mean, it costs a lot more money, but the science data that we've been able to acquire during this period has just been phenomenal.
Well, thank you, Glenn, for joining us on the Space Show.
My pleasure. It's very nice talking to you today.